I have always believed in miracles.
And that is why you will never hear me mention his name.
Deliver Brexit.
It's about finding a pathway forward.
News on News with Mark Latham.
And Mark Latham, leader of One Nation in New South Wales, joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark.
G'day, Brent. Good to be with you. And we're closing in on Election Day. Who would have thought?
Thank goodness. as I said, if Scott Morrison loses on Saturday night, I'm going to have to do another intro for you. I believe. What did he say? The miracle thing?
I believe in miracles. I think he might hang on. I think it's trending.
Do you?
His way. Albanese has made so many mistakes. I think he's thrown the Labor campaign away, and Morrison, with the help of a few independents, might just scrape back into office.
Well, the latest mistake from Albo is this one.
An election campaign, though, and an unemployment rate sitting so low will surely give the government a boost for their argument about how they run the economy.
Our borders are closed, Lisa.
What?
Mm. Our borders are closed.
What?
People are doing it tough.
Can you believe he said that?
Well, they've been open since February, which is some 3 months ago. So where's he been? Has he been living under a rock? Is he totally confused about everything that's going on in the economy? He couldn't name the unemployment rate. He couldn't name the cash rate. He couldn't name his disability policy. He's made a mistake basically every second day of the campaign. And this one, on a day when unemployment has come down to 3.9%, that is as low as it's been since 1974, his explanation is that the borders are closed when clearly they're not. So you'd have to think this guy's disqualified himself from being Prime Minister. There's no great love for Scott Morrison out there, not at all. But when people have looked at the alternatives, they thought, oh, goodness, I couldn't possibly do that, could I?
Well, I mean, there are just things that he has said throughout the campaign, and this is the latest one, that are simply inexcusable.
Well, if you don't know whether Australia's got open or closed borders, and you don't know the unemployment rate, the interest rate, and on the list goes, what do you know? What do you know about the management of the country and its economy? And Morrison has made mistakes. I think people have thought Morrison's a bit of a dud. But you have to say he's a lot more competent than Albanese. Morrison can rattle off a whole bunch of statistics and facts about the nation and its economy, whereas Albanese just seems to get most things wrong. And that one there today, the ABC journalist didn't pull him up and say, hang on,
the borders have been open since February.
She didn't seem to know either. And then put to a minister later on, Simon Birmingham, that the borders are closed. That's why unemployment's come down. So she didn't know either. But, geez, you'd have to be living under a rock, wouldn't you, to know that, yeah, we've got people coming back in at the airports, overseas workers, students, tourists, and the like, and it's been happening for the past 3 months. So these basic aspects of just the facts of what's been going on, Albanese trips up time after time.
Well, a caller this afternoon actually pointed out the fact that Anthony Albanese's electorate's near the airport, and he was isolating for 7 days at home, so surely the noise of the planes going over would make him realise, gee, the borders must be open again because we're seeing planes fly. I'm hearing
that's
planes.
That's right. And what about those queues at the airport?
Yeah.
They haven't exactly been minuscule, so he'd have to know what's been going on. But this is your bread and butter. I mean, if you're the leader of the opposition and the government puts out a press release in February to say the borders are reopening, you just build that into your memory bank, don't you? Your set of knowledge as to how the system is functioning. So, Brent, we've never... Oh, look, I went through the campaign in 04. Nobody's perfect. You do make two or three errors along the way, maybe one a fortnight, but nothing on the scale of what we've seen from Albanese, whether you're talking about Liberal or Labor leaders in the past. You've never seen an error-riddled campaign like this, where I just get to the point where you're thinking, surely the Australian people couldn't put this bloke in the lodge.
Australia's unemployment rate has fallen to 3.9%. It's the lowest since... It goes back to... it's the lowest ever since they've been doing records, and that goes back to 1978.
I read 74... And either way, I was in high school the last time unemployment was under 4% like this. It's an incredibly low number. I remember the 1998 election campaign, Kim Beazley announced a grand plan to get unemployment under 5%, and here it is under 4%. In New South Wales, it's 3.5%. In Western Australia, 2.9%. unemployment in Western Australia, which is basically full employment. So we haven't seen this level of success for quite a long time. I think it does demonstrate the advantages of low immigration. If you give Australians a crack to get the jobs as the economy reopens post-COVID, Australians have grabbed those jobs in big numbers rather than back to the 200,000 a year immigration numbers and foreign workers coming in. So it's good news for people who've got themselves into work. And after COVID, a lot of people need that work. They need that income. Yes, wages aren't rising quickly, but if you've got a job, it's sure better than being down the queue at Centrelink.
So let's talk about the wages data. That came out again this week. I mean, people want to... there was some figures I was reading this morning, and, you know, they did research. I think it was a Resolve poll or something like that. And, you know, 63% of people surveyed said that, you know, the people should have a wage increase. Of course people want a wage increase, but we've got to look at what we can afford as a percentage rate to give those people as a wage increase without sending people broke, small business people broke.
Well, you don't want business to go broke. The other thing you don't want is a wage price spiral. We did see this in the 1970s, that big wage increases, and back then there was a claim of around 25%. It just feeds into inflation, and you're always chasing your own tail. You can never get a real wage increase if inflation is out of control. And it's over 5% now. I think the Reserve Bank takes a lot of blame for that, in that they should have tightened the monetary policy last year to get ahead of the curve instead of waiting for inflation to get so much higher. And the other thing we need to be mindful of are the big budget stimulus in Canberra on both sides. You've got huge deficits being run that add to inflationary pressure. So I think Scott Morrison is right in saying the real enemy here, the real villain, is the inflation rise rather than limited wage increases. You've got to get inflation back under control. It's going to take some more interest rate increases, and hopefully the lesson for both sides of politics is to bring the budget back into balance as quickly as possible instead of the spending spree we had during COVID and now the spending spree we've had during the election campaign.
On my TV screen at the moment, we've got Labor ministers releasing details of campaign costings is the headline. So they're doing it as we speak. See, Anthony Albanese didn't want the press pack to follow him today on his five-city tour. But they kicked up a stink, so eventually he lost, they won. He wanted them to go to Canberra for this particular press conference here with Labor telling us how much they're going to spend on all their promises, or sorry, their plans.
Well, probably Labor's going to have a bigger deficit. The government one next financial year is forecast at $78 billion. Labor will probably add a couple of billion to that. They're both huge numbers that add to inflation. So that's an ongoing problem. But for Albanese to try and almost kidnap the press pack and put them on a plane to Canberra while he went to Queensland just to have cosy photo opportunities, we've never seen anything like that. I mean, this is a guy who said he'd always be accountable. He'd always answer questions. He'd always be there to take responsibility. And yet he was trying to dodge further questions about his own performance by sending the media pack to this press conference in Canberra run by Jim Chalmers while Albanese went to Queensland without any scrutiny. No wonder they kicked up a fuss. And it's hard to believe. You know, I ran the 2004 campaign for Labor. I didn't particularly like the press pack by the end of it. But the idea that I could have shoved them on a plane and sent them in the opposite direction would never have crossed my mind. You had those people with you all the time. That's their job, and your job is to answer their questions. So Albanese's obviously had a very poor relationship with the travelling journalist during the campaign, and today it hit rock bottom.
Have you ever walked out on a... here we go.
Thanks very much. And now Mark's going to...
Sure. Thanks very much. Any questions for me?
Let's go. Mr Albanese, will your deficit be higher or lower than the cult?
I'm sorry, I'll just... Yeah, I know. I'll just wait till this madness finishes. Yeah. Do you want to wait a minute, maybe?
It's honestly about that.
Isn't there a problem with transparency?
We're now on we're following you for answers, Mr Albanese, and you're now just not giving them. You have to answer eventually.
Have you ever had a pack of journalists chasing you out to a side corridor saying, Mr Latham, you have to answer the question?
No, not in the election campaign, where your job basically was to answer all the questions, or at least the reasonable number, probably 12. You know, once you got to 12, maybe you could sort of say everyone's had a go, and it couldn't go on forever. But to scurry away like that, is very unusual. That's why I say he's had a bad relationship with the journalist during a campaign, which is always a bad sign. So his errors and his strange, hostile relationship with journalists asking questions. Now, you know, in some of these settings, the questions are silly, they're repetitive, but some of them are very important, and you've got to front up and answer them.
Yeah.
So there's something unusual about Albanese's psyche. I mean, he's been in federal parliament for 26 years. Generally, he's had a pretty positive relationship with the Canberra press gallery, where they've sucked up to him, he's sucked up to them. But it's all melted down badly during this election campaign, and while that's a bit of an insider story, isn't it? I think for some voters, it just adds to the impression there's something not right with this guy.
Well, there's a skill to handling the press. There's a skill to handling the media. And at an election time, you want to have honed those skills because, yes, you'll be under pressure. And he was under pressure. And when he has been in situations of the media putting him under pressure, it seems as though he dodges questions or he completely goes for a bolt and tries to dodge the pack completely.
He does. And the strange thing about the Labor campaign, Brent, has been that it's almost like they've been unprepared, that someone has sprung this upon them, that you had to front up every day and answer questions and get your policy right, know all the facts and figures. Albanese had 26 years in Parliament to get ready for this. Labor's had 3 years in opposition since the Bill Shorten election loss, but they look unprepared, that they weren't quite ready, that somehow someone called an early election and they were caught on the hop. So it's been, you've got to say, it's been the most unusual experience for one of the major parties to look so amateurish in the way they've handled just about everything. I don't know how they're going explaining their costings. Maybe Jim Chalmers is their most competent person, but you'd have to be thinking surely they could have found someone a bit better than Albo.
Okay, let's talk about 5 years. Is it 5 years after 5 years after it was first debated in Parliament in New South Wales? Today, this morning, it became the final state in Australia. New South Wales became the final state in Australia to introduce assisted dying laws.
Yes, I was there for the vote this morning. I missed yesterday and the day before because I've had the flu, but I was well enough to come in today, and we had the final vote, and by a significant margin, the voluntary assisted dying bill passed through. There'd been probably about 10, 15 hours worth of debate in our chamber, maybe 20. So it had an extensive airing, but the National Party voted as a block in favour of it. You had the left wing of the Labor Party, the Greens, voting for it as a block. So the numbers were always there for it to be carried. My own view is that the bill, for anyone who reads it, 83 pages of complexity. I'm not sure they're going to have many customers for this. There's 22 different hoops, processes you've got to jump through to qualify for this medical suicide. And, you know, it's incredible. There's even a thing they're setting up called the dying board. It's not all that cheerful. You know, it's the sort of thing that you're going to crack a joke about. The dying board in New South Wales is now a reality. And I just think a lot of people will look at the complexity and find it too hard to utilise the new provisions that come into force in 18 months' time.
Why is it taking so long for it to come into force?
Well, it was tried a few times here before I got here with my colleague in 2019. It was a close vote, but it lost in the upper house. And I think what's happened since then is they've added extra members of parliament to their committee drafting the bill. And I think that's been one of the major problems, that they've got a committee of 30 MPs, which is massive, to each throw in their two bobs worth to write a clause here and there, maybe a couple of clauses. And the bill has blown out in length to 83 pages and now 22 hoops to jump through, all these checks and balances and procedures and go back and recheck and so on. It's amazingly complex. So I think they've involved more MPs, given them a slice of the pie, and that's added to the numbers in the parliament. But I'm sure it's diminished the practical effectiveness of this euthanasia law, which I don't... my own view is they'll be back here in a couple of years' time saying, look, it was too complex, we need to simplify it, so it's more usable for people in those desperate circumstances. So I don't think it's the last we've heard of the issue.